I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Into the 9 o'clock hour we go here on Payne and Pendergast. It's flying by this morning. Hope you're having a good day. Appreciate you making the show a part of your day as always. I'm Sean Pendergast alongside Seth Payne. So Seth, Justin Verlander is reportedly going to be out for the year. And I know he said we're going to reevaluate in a couple of weeks. Dusty Baker has said the same thing. I'm curious, how are you internalizing this Justin Verlander injury? Are you operating mentally as if he is out for the season right now?
I'm not. And I don't know if that means I'm in denial. Like, I don't want to turn this into a whole, you know, the media reports were wrong or blah, 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 whatever. There's uncertainty at the moment as to what exactly he's going to do. I guess part of it is that because it's a shortened season, I figure, all right, Verlander should be good for, you know, several ways. In a normal season, he's good for 7 or 8 wins over replacement. This year, maybe that's only 2 or 3 wins over replacement. The problem is you're not sure about the caliber of guys who are replacing him. You know, we don't know exactly what Christian Javier is going to be. We don't know if Framber Valdez is. Hey. We know if Framber is going to be good for all the innings he's in, except for one, or just what?
In the last 3 days has clarified very little along those lines.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And, you know, truth be told, look, you got a bunch of rookies. Half these guys aren't going to end up being probably very viable major league pitchers.
Yeah.
And that's a tough pill to swallow. But I still feel like it's a short season, and the lineup can cure all. Just like in a bad company or organization or whatever, you can do all kinds of stuff the wrong way as long as you're selling product. Like the revenue cures all, sales cures all. This lineup can cure all pitching woes as long as it's prolific enough. Now, we know that that falls short in the playoffs at times, but at least it gives you hope.
Yeah, this Seth, you pointed this out earlier. This just might be a different season. Obviously, it's a different season in terms of length and with no fans and all those things. But I think what we're learning, at least through the small sample of these first 5 games, is that this just might end up being a war of attrition. Like this might, and I'm not talking about guys pulling out because of the coronavirus. I'm talking about pitchers experiencing elbow tenderness, forearm tenderness, shoulder tenderness. The team that is standing at the end of the year might be the one that's able to manage the arms, and I don't even mean manage them in terms of trying to develop them as players. I mean trying to conserve them as human beings. The teams that might be standing at the end of the year are the ones that manage, you know, for to use an NBA term, that load manage their pitchers the best, you know, that find a way to get to the end of the year with enough elite level pitching to go with enough just competent pitching to get through games.
Well, luckily, Sean, we've got a guy who knows how to preserve pitchers, don't we? With Dusty Baker, he's not what he was. He's not what he was back with the Cubs. He's grown and changed a lot. I was thinking about it last night, though. As you know, the Astros had 8 good innings of pitching, really. It was just a matter of, okay, that one disaster of an inning. But I was thinking about how at the beginning of this year, we thought about Dusty Baker's challenge as a manager was simply going to be, wow, how is he going to help these guys navigate their way through a season in which they're going to be despised by all these teams and fan bases? They're going to be heckled constantly. And it turns out to be the exact opposite. That part of it hasn't been much of an issue. We saw the first hint of it last night, but let's remember, like, realistically, nothing really happened. You know, it wasn't nothing really happened. Dusty Baker's huge challenge this year is in having this host of rookie and extremely young pitchers on your relief staff and with your starters and somehow figure a way to cobble all this together while also dealing with even more injuries because of the shortened ramp up. This might be one of the most challenging seasons Dusty Baker's ever had on the actual just nuts and bolts managing side. Forget all that kumbaya. Hey guys, we're gonna fight off the outside forces. This is all just very serious baseball strategy that needs to be done.
We should mention before we get to Verlander and just the devastation level of his injury, if he is out for the season, Dusty Baker, Brent Strom, and I'm one other. Gary Pettis, the third base coach, all had their 2021 options picked up yesterday.
So we
have not mentioned that on the show today. We should mention it because I think there were a lot of people thinking that Dusty might be one and done, and I think this is an indicator because he hasn't done much as a manager yet. I think this is an indicator from Jim Crane. Like, even Jim Crane realizes, like, this is not exactly a year to go judging a guy and how great a managing job he does, you know?
But Al, I do wonder, too. I don't know how Jim Crane wanted Dusty Baker or hoped Dusty Baker would handle the retaliation side of things if teams started coming after the Astros. But you always got the sense that, okay, Dusty Baker's there for his, you know, cool guiding hand. But he is an old school guy, right?
Yeah.
Like, he is a guy that kind of, it still means something if you call somebody a bitch or something like that. It's not just
clearly,
like, oh, LOL, internet hijinks. It's not like that. He's an old school guy.
Yeah.
And I found it interesting when Dusty Baker was asked if, you know, why the Astros wouldn't retaliate last night. Dusty Baker didn't say, hey, we don't retaliate or there's no place for that. He simply said we wouldn't retaliate when we have all those rookies pitching because that's not fair to the rookies.
Yeah.
Which implies that there is a time and a place for retaliation.
Which implies.
Like Dusty's no punk, man.
Yeah.
Dusty, look, I don't know who Joe Kelly thinks he is, but he has not seen and done the things or probably even heard about or aware of the things that a guy like Dusty could do. Let me ask you real quick.
Okay.
Dusty Baker, current Dusty Baker versus current Joe Kelly in a fist fight. Who wins?
Are you kidding me? I'll take
Dusty
the old
Baker.
Man. Yeah.
He's going to be like Morgan Freeman in Million Dollar Baby.
Hell yeah.
He'll do it with one wheel, do it with
hell
one
yeah.
Glove. Yeah.
No, Dusty, absolutely I'm taking Dusty. I think it's a big reason he has the job, Seth. You were kind of posing the rhetorical question there. You wonder how that went into Jim Crane's evaluation of Dusty. I think a big reason Dusty has the job is because Jim Crane knew that they would need a guy who can handle this type of stuff, who's been around the block before, who's going to be defiant when other teams are trying to come at them. My guess is Jim Crane did not like other teams coming at the Astros as the investigation was unfolding with this thing, especially knowing that so many of these other teams were doing the exact same thing. I think it's a big reason he has this job. So Justin Verlander, let's assume for a second he's out for the year. And I'll be honest with you, Seth, my bigger concern with Verlander is that he's out for 2021 also. You know, that this is a Tommy John situation, that we may have seen Justin Verlander throw his last pitch as a Houston Astro to the point where if someone walked up to me and said, here's a piece of paper, and if you sign this piece of paper, Verlander is now out for 2020, but he's back for 2021, and he's back to Verlander for 2021, I'd sign it in a second. And this whole two-week thing, I don't know that Chandler Rome runs with this thing unless he's got great information. I think they're just hoping for a Hail Mary at this point, Dusty Baker and Justin Verlander. So if that's the case, we've had to live through some pretty devastating season-ending injuries over the last few years here in this town. Some would argue season-ending injuries that cost this team shots, legitimate shots, at championships. And I think Verlander being out for the year probably cost the Astros, unless this just turns into a super wonky year for pitching injuries around baseball, probably cost them a legitimate chance at a championship. He's their most valuable player, in my opinion. So, Seth, I came up with four players who sustained very devastating season-ending injuries in recent Houston sports history, and I want you to do the compare-contrast here and tell me if your devastation feeling matches or exceeds the Verlander devastation. Chris Paul, 2018 playoffs.
That
game five hamstring may have cost them an NBA championship.
That's worse than if Verlander isn't good to go this year.
Yeah.
Because this is just such a weird year, and it's not altogether clear what's going to come of it. Whereas Chris Paul, that was just within grasp. And the Rockets, in a lot of respects, had the Warriors where they wanted them, and then obviously they did not.
I think that's the one of all these that I'm about to give you where you can directly connect the dots. You can connect championship opportunity to injury.
Yeah.
Like they were on the verge of knocking off the greatest team assembled of the last 20 years. Let me ask you this. Does it factor in that not that Chris Paul is super popular or anything. I think a lot of people hated those Warriors teams too. that the casual fan that doesn't have a dog in the fight is probably pointing at the Astros and the fans and laughing at them over the Verlander injury right now versus Chris Paul, where there are probably a lot of people around the NBA that might have been rooting for the Rockets because of who they were playing, the Warriors.
Oh,
the Schadenfreude,
yeah,
that the rest of the Schadenfreude that the rest of the baseball universe is having over the Verlander thing, does that change your mind at all?
No, no.
Or you're able to stay off of Twitter, maybe it doesn't factor in.
Yeah. I mean, some of that, yeah, so much of that is, it's just, this is one of those situations where social media can make your life a whole lot worse. Like, there's no need for you to realize how many people are happy that various Astros are getting injured or being targeted. It just brings out the worst in a minority of people. It just brings out the worst in their human nature. And I don't need to see it.
Right.
As far as Chris Paul goes, I think the David versus Goliath element is there. And I think especially because I think that when Morey pulled off the Chris Paul trade, I just respected the hell out of the fact that various teams around the league were just throwing their arms up in frustration over the Golden State Warriors and the fact that they would never be beaten as long as that configuration was there, long as those guys were there, and that Daryl Morey just said, no, screw it, we're gonna go for it.
Yes.
We're gonna do something unorthodox, and we're gonna no, it's two ball dominant guards. Go screw yourself. We're gonna try to do something about it. And it would have been that triumphant, the fact that people were so critical of the Chris Paul trade and they were so certain that it would never work out, and you came this close to it actually working out.
It's a good point. Let's rapid fire these next three. Deshaun Watson's knee injury his rookie year.
That was the biggest visceral reaction I've had to any of these that we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Because I remember I was driving to Target when I got word, and it was just coming on the heels of that World Series victory.
It's the next day.
Was awesome. Yeah. And it was just, I've never had a feeling quite like that, just where you're so conflicted about something awesome happening followed by a kick in the nargs immediately. I don't think I've ever had an experience quite like that in sports. Had it in life, but not in sports.
The highest of high and the lowest of lows. I mean, people, I know Texan fans don't forget, but I think, you know, and I don't know that people around the league forget, because Deshaun has gone on to become a really, really good player. But those first six games were magical. I mean, if they had held on at the end of the New England and Seattle games, he'd have been 5-1 as a starter against a really, really difficult schedule, putting up record-setting numbers. It was wild.
You know what the worst thing that didn't happen but could have been the worst thing that ever happened in sports in terms of extreme joy followed by extreme despair? I cannot watch that image from the one Super Bowl where the Patriots won and they doused Bill Belichick with the cold Gatorade as his father was standing right there. His father, who was like 85 years old at the time and looked frail, he's getting doused with ice water. Oh my gosh. I still see that. He was fine. He worked out. It's not like he got pneumonia and died at that moment, but I'm like, what the hell are you guys doing?
Does that count as attempted murder? Jumping an ice bucket on an 85-year-old
man? That would have been, could it be manslaughter, though? Yeah. Like negligent homicide? Yeah, I don't
maybe,
know. It was
maybe.
Like, you clearly, that's not what you're intended to do, but you morons, what are you doing?
What about J.J. Watt's kind of series of season-ending injuries from really the playoffs in 2015 when he was helped off the field to 2015, 2016, 2017. All three of those seasons ended for J.J. Watt with season-ending catastrophic injuries.
I mean, that's just a different kind of hurt, right?
Yeah.
The one that I hate the most about that is that, I became injury-prone later in my career, and you can just sense that, oh, here we go again mentality. Like, well, when I was a player, I could sense and I could see and feel when people would say, you know, when I got injured, it was like, oh, here we go again. So I hate that as a fan, I kind of have that same feeling. And I'm ashamed of myself for it when it happens with JJ, and you're just thinking like, okay, not this again, please no. The thing that's different with JJ is that I learned long ago never to say JJ can't do something the next year.
Yep.
Because he's like so clearly and so obviously like his. I used to say, look, it's really hard for an interior defensive lineman to get into the high teens or 20 sacks. And then he'd go out and he would get even more than
next
year.
Right.
You know, so JJ might never be as good as he was in his MVP season again, or he might end up being like defensive MVP 4 years from now. Neither would shock me.
Last one, Matt Schaub, 2011 Lisfranc injury.
That's one that I think that people have a kind of cognitive dissonance about, and they don't want to believe or remember that Schaub was actually really good in this system with Gary Kubiak and Gary Kubiak's system. But he was. He was for that 2011 season especially. Yeah. But I think because they never genuinely got that close, I think that people kind of – and I'm the same way. You still – it's not like I believed in Matt Schaub at the time that he got injured. I was excited about everything, but it's not like I believed him in him the way I believe in, you know, Deshaun Watson or Chris Paul or some of these other guys.
No, but I think it was one of those things that once you watch that team play without Schaub and you saw how competitive they were, and they were without Andre Johnson for a big chunk of that period too – and you watched how competitive you were, and you watched how they competed in Baltimore with T.J. Yates at quarterback throwing three interceptions, and you go, man, if they just had Schaub here just managing the game, they probably win this game in Baltimore. Hell, if they had Schaub down the stretch that year when they lost three straight after they clinched the division, they probably get a bye in the first round of the playoffs. So the Schaub one is very, very underrated. All right, speaking of injuries, an update on Eric Gordon, who twisted an ankle in the Rockets scrimmage with the Celtics last night. We have an update from Adrian Wojnarowski, and we have it for you next. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Here's the latest on Eric Gordon, Rockets shooting guard, who twisted an ankle last night late in the second quarter of the Rockets' 137-112 scrimmage win over the Boston Celtics. Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN.
X-rays were negative last night on that left ankle, but I'm told the early estimate for Eric Gordon is potentially 1 to 2 weeks out of the Rockets lineup. They'll know more today. They'll see how the ankle settled overnight. But he's an important part of this team. He's likely their best defender, and they need him to be their third scorer behind Westbrook and James Harden. And this is a team, Houston, that is only a game and a half up from the seventh seed. And in this first round of the postseason, you want to avoid the Lakers or the Clippers. And so not having him potentially for most or potentially all of these seeding games, could be a real issue for the Rockets.
Yeah, no, so I think we should – Woj kind of laid that out, and I think just to get a little more granular, Seth, the Rockets' first game back with the restart of the regular season is going to be on Friday, this Friday, July 31st. Their last game of the restart, the 8-game restart slate, is on August 14th against Philadelphia. So it's literally a 2-week-long restart for the Rockets. If the 1 to 2 week time frame starts ticking today, then Woj is right. I mean, and my guess is older player, ankle injury is not something to be trifled with. That's something that can linger a little bit. My guess is now Eric Gordon is probably out for the rest of what is the regular season for the Rockets.
Right.
And guess.
I think when it comes to this regular season, they will math their way to at least a 500 record. You know, it's yes, they'll miss out without having Eric Gordon in there and everything he brings to the table.
Yep.
But just by virtue of their athleticism, their scoring ability, all of that, and just their actual skill and the fact that they've got two of the best players in the league still on their team, they're gonna be just fine headed into the playoffs. It might affect their seeding a little bit, but I think that Eric Gordon being healthy and available in the playoffs is the paramount concern.
They are, just to give an idea of what the standings look like, the Lakers are 5.5 games in front of everybody right now. So the Lakers are going to be the one seed going into the postseason out of the Western Conference. The Clippers are in the two seed right now at 5.5 games back. They are a game and a half ahead of the Denver Nuggets. I don't know if those two teams play each other in these 8 games or not. If I had to guess, I would take the Clippers with all the rest they've had and everything to stay in that two seed. So if you're the Rockets, kind of what Woj was just alluding to, Seth, and you and I talked about earlier, the clump of teams after the Clippers are 5.5 back of the Lakers, and then it goes like this. Denver, 7 back. Utah, 8.5 back. Rockets and Thunder, the identical records, 9.5 back, and then Dallas is 11 back. So you've got 5 teams within 4 games of one another, and you've got, I guess most importantly for the Rockets, you've got the Mavericks only a game and a half back of the Rockets for the 6th seed. So to me, if you're wanting to make sure that the Rockets can make as long a run as possible, and with matchups being so very important, you want to stay out of that 7 seed. You got to stay away from the two LA teams in the first round of the playoffs so that you get one of these other teams. And I think, I honestly think just through either talent level or experience, they're going to be able to muscle and not having to travel to any of these places. Denver or Utah, you're talking about having to go to elevation. Oklahoma City, you're talking about going to one of the harder places to go play in terms of the crowd noise. You're going to be playing any one of those teams. If you stay out of the seven, you're going to be playing Denver, Utah, OKC, Dallas, but you're playing them on these neutral courts in Orlando, and you're going to have, in those games, you're going to have arguably the two best players on the floor in any of those games. You know, the Russ and James are better. They're better than to me, both of them are better than any player Denver has, better than any player Utah has, better than any player OKC has. Luka, you could make an argument for with Dallas, certainly. But I think, yes, through what you just said, math, talent, and I think just that Harden and Westbrook play at a high enough level, I think they'll stay out of the seven, and I'm confident against any of those other teams in the first round.
You know, the nice thing about the NBA is, for one, they have the bubble, so you're pretty confident that they're going to make it through, right?
Yes,
I mean, the numbers are down to nothing. Like, they're doing a much better job than I think I would have ever anticipated them doing. I thought there'd be more positive tests by this point, but you feel confident they're going to finish the end of the season. And despite the weird timing of it, this is the one where you feel like, okay, this championship, correct me if I'm wrong, because this is the way I feel. I feel like this championship needs no explanations or asterisks or anything else like that. I think the 2020 NBA champion will be the same as the champion in any other year. It's been a more of an ordeal, and you've had to deal with a couple of opt-outs, but for the most part, the teams are intact, and these are the guys that would have been in the playoffs regardless. Whereas with baseball, it's going to feel different. You know, I'll still enjoy a championship if the Astros win it, don't get me wrong, but it's just not quite the same. And so this one, I feel like I'm more invested in this. I feel like that's what you asked earlier about some of the heartbreak that I felt with the Rockets, you know, with Chris Paul versus Verlander this year. Baseball is just such a weird crapshoot of a year in baseball that I can't get too emotionally distraught over any losses.
But you're pretty emotionally invested in the Rockets, it sounds like.
I am. Yeah. I am. Yeah. I need to know, Sean, I've invested a lot of time as a fan in this Rockets team led by James Harden.
Yes.
It's been damn near a decade now.
Yeah.
Right?
2012.
And we still don't know exactly how we're going to feel about James Harden a decade from now.
Right.
You know, I know I'll regard him as, you know, obviously one of the very best Rockets that ever played, and we've had a hell of a time watching it, but there's just not that same feel as a guy that brought you a championship like Olajuwon. So we need the window is closing.
Yeah.
We've got several more years of his dominance before you need to start over. And so every single year I feel that much more urgency.
He's looked good in these scrimmages.
Yeah.
He looked
yeah.
really good last night. So I think, you know, whatever conditioning he was doing is translating for James Harden, and they get started back up on Friday against the Dallas Mavericks. We started this segment off by talking about Eric Gordon. What's your concern level over Eric Gordon? I wish it weren't an ankle, but I'm, you know, look, of all the things, you can't get choosy about injuries, I suppose, when the x-ray was negative. And I you know, my hope is that Mike D'Antoni, and of all the coaches, I think D'Antoni would be cautious with something like this because he's good at coaching a veteran team. But be cautious with Eric Gordon and keep an eye on the bigger picture and make sure he's ready to go come mid to late August as opposed to this Friday. You
know? Yeah, I think the one thing about D'Antoni this year is that I think he's shown signs of distributing the minutes a little bit more evenly, and perhaps they weren't going to rely on a seven-man rotation quite as often as we sometimes dread with D'Antoni. And with Austin Rivers coming back, it's not going to be as potentially devastating as it could have been at other times, like if Eric Gordon ends up taking 3 or 4 weeks to recover. But I also think just because of the style of basketball that they're playing too, they can withstand individual injuries or individual, you know, breaks or load lessening than perhaps they would otherwise. Even with the Eric Gordon sprained ankle, hopefully knock on wood, that's all it is, I feel I'm not too distraught over the injury.
I'm not. They've got more bodies, I guess, more veteran bodies, capable veteran bodies, I guess, than they've had on this team heading into a postseason in a long time. I guess the thing is, it's a gigantic assembly of athletic wing players. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they are. I mean, they're clearly all in on this style of basketball. The only guy they have over 6'8", I think, is Tyson Chandler, who hasn't gotten off the bench since Christmas time.
Kelly Eiko showed the minutes rotation, the minutes distribution during the regular season. He's got nine guys that had 20 or more minutes per game. You know, like between when you go from McLemore, Rivers, Gordon, House, up to Covington, you know, Covington almost still feels like a new Christmas present. There's reasons to be optimistic on that front.
He does. I mean, I guess if it's almost like Seth, Mike D'Antoni plays his own little game of circle of trust, like you and I do with the Astros every week, where he's got his circle of trust that's more expansive in the regular season, and we know his MO has been to shave it down when you get to the postseason. I do wonder if he ends up going with that sort of MO, Mike D'Antoni, which guy who has been one of those 20-minute guys that you're talking about winds up watching from the bench like Joe Johnson did in previous seasons, like Daniel House did last year. House was really good during the regular season, and then by the end of the season, him and Kenneth Faried, like these guys, they could have worn street clothes underneath their warm-ups.
I think that it might be different this year because of Russell Westbrook and the load management they've been doing with him. That maybe that's kind of normalized it somewhat, and that D'Antoni knows that in the playoffs you can't quite do the same kind of load management, but you're going to have to do some kind of – you have to be very mindful of Westbrook. And it's nice that Westbrook is receptive to it because Harden does not want to come off the floor ever. Like, you get the sense Harden would play 48 minutes a night if you allowed him to. But with Westbrook, you just flat out have to. And I think D'Antoni maybe has shifted his psychology a little bit because of it.
Yeah, just purely counting up bodies here. Westbrook, Harden, Gordon, Covington, Tucker. That's the five that'll – well, it's the five that's been starting games lately. Certainly, I think it would be the five that would close out games. Then Jeff Green, Austin Rivers, Daniel House, Ben McLemore. They just picked up Mbah Mute is back now with the team. Damari Carroll's a guy who's a veteran who's accumulated some pretty good minutes around the league. That's 11 bodies right there. So
yeah. Well, and also, Sean, they're going this super small ball too, right? Yeah. So I think D'Antoni, no matter what his core philosophy is about playing smaller rotations or what have you, you have to tweak that a little bit. Yeah. You know, maybe other coaches would, you know, play an extreme rotation with lots of numbers if you're playing the super small ball, but at least maybe D'Antoni is going to expand his roster a little bit because of that alone.
Seth, can I bring forth in the next segment a request for coronavirus censure to the coronavirus commissioner of Harris County?
You can. I can't guarantee that I will grant it,
merely
but
a request.
I will listen to your case.
Okay,
yes.
Good. It's merely a request. I will have that for you coming up next. All right, Seth Payne back in today, which means the coronavirus commissioner of Harris County is back in today. The self-appointed, prestigious, honorable, really, coronavirus commissioner of Harris County, Seth Payne, who hands out commendations and censures to people who are either acting responsibly or irresponsibly within the cloud of the pandemic that we are living in
now. It's really one of the reasons we've had such unheralded, unrivaled success within the city of Houston. Now, I'm speaking about some very small and select sections of certain zip codes. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Well, we've done extremely well. Doesn't make the mainstream media.
Right.
Several little pockets, a couple of blocks within the 77098 area code. A little chunk of Bel Air, a couple of streets over there. We've done really well, but no, they don't want to talk about that.
Floors
on your CNN or your Fox News.
Floors 14 through 16 of the building that I live in.
Yes,
clean
yes,
as
yes.
a whistle, Seth.
Yes. As the COVID commissioner, I am privy to, you know, various information that the rest of the public is not privy to.
Right.
You know, like people I run into in the store that say, yeah, I'm doing cool. And I'm like, yes, I get that all the time.
Of course
I get that all the time.
Right. And as I think as many know, you're not afraid to go outside of your jurisdiction to hand out these commendations and censures.
I consider it a job requirement.
Right.
If you look at my job description, it says, as I see fit.
Right. I mean, it says Harris County, but the world is really your oyster when it comes to either raising people up or telling people, wagging a finger at them and telling them, do better.
You know, a lot of people, sometimes they'll say, hey, no, it's not. We don't have more test cases just because we're testing more. And I'll say, yes, that's not true. But it is because I know exactly who is sick and identify them on site, and then we test those people.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So along those lines, Seth, I put forth, I'm making a request for, well, I'm just going to put this person forth. My guess is this falls under censure, but, you know, I still don't know with you because there's been a few times that I thought a commendation was going to be a censure and vice versa, and you zig when you, it seems like you would zag sometimes. So anyways.
I like to keep the peasants guessing.
That's right.
You don't want to be too comfortable. So I say, you know what I say? I say Hammurabi, soft, soft. That's what it is. Do I etch my code? Do I etch my laws and my rules into stone? Hell no. Because I got to be able to stick and move when I see fit.
Fly like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Yes. David T. Hines is the name of this person. He is from Florida.
I already dislike him.
He's in some pretty serious trouble. Seth, you're aware of the payment protection program that the U.S. government has put forth as a coronavirus relief fund.
Yes, I both advised against that and advocated for it. So when I run for office later on, I'll be able to say, "Oh, you know, it was there was pork in that bill."
Yeah. No, right? That's a really smart move by you. Hines was somebody who benefited from the PPP program.
Good for him.
Yeah, well,
we wanted to keep to retain employees, right?
Yeah, well, it's
I'll commend that, Sean. That's what it's for. Retaining employees.
You know, I didn't say that's what it was for.
Oh,
Let me finish. He's in some pretty serious trouble, Seth.
For retaining employees?
No. After scamming his way to $3.9 million. By filing for loans on behalf of different companies. The 29-year-old from Miami has been charged with bank fraud, making false statements to a financial institution, and engaging in transactions in unlawful protest. After scamming millions of dollars in PPP loans, Hines started blowing the money on luxury items. You know, usually you'd think you want to try to keep kind of a low profile if you were scamming $3.9 million.
Yeah.
Remember that scene in Goodfellas where they, right after the Lufthansa heist, in walks Johnny Roastbeef with his wife to the club, and she's got a mink coat on, and they have a pink Cadillac out back, and Robert De Niro's like, "What is your problem, dude? You're a lightning rod." That's what this guy went and bought a 2020 Lamborghini. Which costs about $300,000.
Oh, gosh. And he probably...
there's more.
He wrote an IOU on the back of his PPP loan
documentation.
Here you go.
He
good for it.
He endorsed it over to the dealership. Right. He spent thousands of dollars on dating websites, jewelry, clothes. In total, he blew around $500,000 before he was caught. How was he caught, though, Seth? This is where the story gets even better. Or worse. His Lamborghini was involved in a hit-and-run accident.
Oh, my gosh.
From the report. Here's this from the police report. This is from the report in the Miami Herald. Hines and other similar fraud cases are starting to pop up in South Florida and other parts of the country. The loans are forgiven by the government if they're properly used by businesses. Congress is considering another infusion of these because the pandemic is hurting the economy. Federal investigators linked the Lamborghini to Hines, who appeared in Miami federal court on fraud and other charges Monday, after he was involved in a hit-and-run accident on July 11th, Miami police impounded his car, and now prosecutors plan to seize it.
I wonder how – I wasn't clear on how that hit-and-run led to them realizing that he is involved in all this other fraud. I suppose other than just maybe they realized that this guy didn't have like 6 months ago, didn't have a pot to pee in.
And he's got a Lamborghini now that's in a hit and run.
Sean, I'm sometimes torn with cases like this, and this might surprise you. I will do what is right. But there's a certain part of me that just admires the chutzpah. Isn't there a part of you that wishes he had the gall to do something like this, no matter how morally suspect it is? This kid, he's 29.
Yeah.
There's something where, you know what? How the hell does a 29-year-old figure out how to do all of this and actually pull it off? And yet, I have to do what is right, and I have to censure him with extreme prejudice to the point where I have to ban him from ever entering the state of Texas.
Okay. I like that. I like that you've banned him from the state of Texas. I do love
I like the idea of like deporting people to other states, not deporting immigrants out of the country, but actually deporting American citizens out. I might actually get what's it called where you get a warrant to bring somebody across state lines?
Extradition?
I might extradite them just so I can deport them back to Florida.
Just for sport.
Yeah.
Just extradite him just to kick him out again, right? Seth, it's a classic case of something where you see this in a lot of really nefarious criminals, which is, man, if this guy just used that energy for good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I always think, whenever I think of this, I always think of Sam Hurd. You remember Sam Hurd, the former wide receiver for the Cowboys and the Bears?
Mm-hmm.
Back in, like, the late aughts in the early part of the previous decade, like 2010, 2011. Do you remember how Sam Hurd wound up flunking out of the NFL? They found out he was the kingpin for a drug ring.
That's right. Like, in Chicago, wasn't
yes.
it? It was, yeah, I remember that. That was weird.
It was like a drug version of Amway, man. Like, he had guys kicking up levels and things like that. It was like MLM for cocaine. It was crazy. And this dude was doing it while he was still an NFL football player.
Right.
The compartmentalization that was going on was fascinating.
It was like his dream of being like that. He was using the NFL to springboard him to his dream job of being a drug kingpin,
right.
Which is like that. You know what that comes from? That's just watching too much damn movies.
Narcos.
I was about to say Netflix, but I think that was before there was streaming Netflix with
Maybe.
Sam Hurd. Well, look about like Nate Newton. You know, Nate Newton was still playing, was he not?
Yeah.
When he was busted with like 400 pounds of weed.
Which led to one of my
favorite all-time jokes, which was in the last 6 months, Nate Newton has been caught with over 400 pounds of weed, but he promises to be down to 300 by training camp.
That's pretty good. It holds up.
He always had weight issues, yeah.
It holds up.
He's doing well, though. He's
skinny now, right?
And he's got a radio show in Dallas. I think Nate just had a taste for the exciting, I guess.
Yeah. No, radio will always take your tired and your downtrodden and your formerly arrested and your wretched refuse. Like, they want Craig Carton back on the radio up in New York. Remember him? Boomer's old host?
Yeah, he's good at his job.
Scammed people out of millions of dollars, and now he may be back. Who knows? Who knows?
I think I deliver a censure to this character from Florida,
okay,
and I
good.
Ban him from ever crossing state lines.
That's good too.
Which point I authorize all citizens to not just commit a citizen's arrest, but go ahead and rough him up a little bit if you find him.
You're giving people immunity for assault on this guy?
I take all that back.
Be careful.
That last part back, yeah.
Yeah, the transcripts for this segment will not be friendly.
somebody's gonna find themselves in court,
right.
And use me as their defense.
That's right.
I've got a fiat from the Corona Commissioner of Harris County.
Seth, I'm curious, as the coronavirus commissioner, I had a text here from somebody earlier asking, hey, Sean, were you asymptomatic? Did you get your test back? Are you asymptomatic for coronavirus? And I think what they're asking me is, do I have the antibodies? Because Amy and I, as you know, Amy and I took an antibody test last Friday. We donated blood. As you can see, the inside of my forearm is super yellow there still from the bruising. But it was.
Oh, wow. Do you bruise easily?
I usually don't, but for whatever reason, I did this time. And,
yeah.
And so we donated blood, and with that, you get, I guess this is a pretty good little PSA for this. If you want to get an antibody test, one way to do it and not have to pay for it is to go donate blood at the Gulf Coast Regional Blood Center down there on La Concha.
That's a nice little bonus.
Yeah.
That's a little tweak, and then, you know, you don't even have to tell anybody that's how you got it. You can just say, no, I did the good and noble thing.
Right.
I went and donated blood.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, you're going to get an antibody test out of it.
The answer to the question, caller, is I don't have the test back yet. It takes about a week for the test to come back. So.
No, really?
Yeah.
I got mine. Yeah. I was lucky enough when I did it. In my time in the process, I got it back within a few days. I was negative for the antibodies.
Were you?
And negative for the COVID.
Yeah.
Well, my daughter's been tested twice for COVID now, and now she'll be tested a third time because they keep postponing this surgery.
Are they doing the swab test with her?
Yeah, it's just the swab, yeah. So, if you're going to live through this period in history, to be able to say you're tested a bunch of times.
Because, Seth, as you know, and this is why I'm bringing this up, you're the coronavirus commissioner. I am part of the 10-person media pool that the Texans are allowing into practice starting on August 14th, I think is potentially the first padded practice, I believe, August 14th. But they're going to start testing us. John McClain is in that group. I know Aaron Wilson is in that group. I'm just looking at the group text that I get about this because they're ramping us up. You know, there's some information we need to share and stuff like that. But starting August 10th, it's the same thing as the players. I get tested August 10th. And then for the next 2 days, I don't get tested. And then Thursday and Friday of that week, the 13th and 14th, I get tested. So if I'm negative all three times, then I am, you know, then they open the gate and I'm allowed in.
Are you going to, and then how often do you get tested after
every
all
day?
That, you know, every single day.
Every day. Yeah, it's just okay. Like the players, man.
Do you know which test it's going to be?
I think it's the same one McLean was talking about earlier. It's the swab up the nose.
The swab. Oh, but it's not like the deep swab.
Not
it's
the jam the brain swab. Yeah, the
it's
shallow.
It's just a rim job of your nose with the swab.
Okay,
there.
Well, that was a little graphic. But
you know, I wonder why it seems like baseball is using that little spit test. That seems like the cheek swab is the best, but I guess it's not as reliable.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I think the results are not immediate. I think it's like 24-hour turnaround for the results.
You know what I haven't heard yet, and I've asked a couple people, and I think they genuinely didn't know. I wonder if the Texans, like many teams in baseball are doing, will have their own testing equipment on site so they can be even more proactive about it. It really, frankly, it sounds like Cal McNair pretty much wrote a blank check to do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
I'm sure Cal probably wouldn't appreciate me saying that. If there's one thing I know rich people don't like, it's putting off an image that, yeah, they'll spend money on anything. I would say that it seems like Cal has been pretty aggressive in attacking this thing. And frankly, the turnaround time and the frequency with which the league protocol is might not be as aggressive as some individual teams want. And I know some baseball teams have bought their own equipment. I hope the Texans are being aggressive on that front, too.
I'll rapid fire these, Seth. They sent out a memo yesterday of all of the things they're doing over at NRG Stadium to try to be as, you know, COVID testing, anti-COVID friendly as you can possibly be. You know what I mean? Like, to be as prepared for the pandemic as you can be. A tier system implemented by the NFL that allows certain restricted access. By the way, I am tier 2. As a member of the media, as a member of this group of the media, league-issued proximity sensor devices that must be worn at all times inside the facility. So kind of what you were talking about before, Seth, like where you wish that A.J. McCarron would wear a certain thing. I know you were talking about more of a GPS thing with him, but a proximity sensor device that must be worn at all times, I guess to help with contact tracing if there's
it's really, really cool. Yeah. If somebody tests positive, they're able to figure out who spent more than 15 minutes within 6 feet of a person. And it accounts for whether, you know, if these people work in the office side of the building, but there's a wall between them. It figures all this stuff out. It's really cool. So they'll be able to just very immediately figure out who the high-risk individuals are. And that's throughout the NFL they're going to be doing that.
They talk about the increased frequency of cleaning and disinfecting the building, signage reinforcing the importance of proper hygiene and social distancing in the building, the hiring of personnel, hygiene coordinator Ray Claridge. They promote Jeff Kaplan to infection control officer. I think this answers the question you were talking about. An on-site COVID-19 testing facility operated in coordination with BioReference Laboratories. Is that what you're talking about, Seth?
Well, no, BioReference is the company that's doing it for the entire NFL.
Okay.
So I don't know. Now, I don't know if the Texans could cut a side deal with them as well.
Right.
Or just do other stuff on their own. Whatever it is, I know that it seems like the Texans have been pretty damn aggressive about this, which is encouraging because that's a competitive advantage. Also, I have to explain, since Brandy was listening and she's just learned that I'm not going to be one of the media members allowed in, at least in the initial wave. This is the reason. It's because Sean, when asked to write articles, actually writes the articles. So we have two people at this station who are very, very good at writing consistently when asked. Now, John Lopez is the best writer amongst all of us, like in terms of like actual prose and everything.
He's an actual author. You know?
But Brandon Scott and Sean Pendergast will churn out content like they're little monkeys. Like Sean's in a room and like with a cattle prod,
right?
Somebody's prodding him to type.
More content.
So
sweatshop.
Our boss Armin knows that I am not that guy,
right?
So that's don't be offended on my behalf.
Yeah, no, it's all good. So several other bullet points here about socially distanced locker rooms. In fact, some of the players are in the visitors' locker room, from what I've heard, as training camp unfolds. A lot of the stuff, Seth, from talking to people over there the first few days, are just kind of getting their arms around how long it's going to take guys to get from one area of the facility to another because it's so different. You know, guys are coming from different locker rooms to different meeting places. They're meeting in the bubble now instead of in certain meeting rooms, and so you got to go across the street, and so there's a lot of trial and error right now with just putting a schedule together, because you don't know, does it take guys 2 minutes or 15 minutes to get from here to there in the building right now? It's a really weird time over there.
So it's like when you're in college and all of a sudden you realize you got two classes next to each, one class after another,
yeah.
And like it's all the way across campus.
Same thing.
So you got to drop the class.
Same That's what I did.
I'm not going to walk briskly. Yeah. Not in September.
Are you kidding me? Landry Locker jumps in here. In the Loop starts up here in a few minutes. And he, of course, the host of the post-game show as well, following Astro games. Landry, what was the post-game show like last
night? Oh, it was fun. We had Dodgers calls. We had Astros calls. We had some good stuff. It was fun. Man, yesterday was great. Like, let's be honest. Like, you had... I think Dusty Baker made a mistake as a manager. I thought he should have left Valdez in and let him fight a little bit. So you get to criticize a managerial decision. Then, of course, you have the drama. You have the beef. You have something to talk about other than the stuff we've been talking about for months. So you never want to eat an L. You'd rather eat W's. But I enjoyed the hell out of being able to react to that last night.
Were any of the Dodgers fans that called in embarrassed at all about the fact that they had to import somebody to defend the honor of the 2017 Dodgers team?
I'm glad you said that, because I have a surprise for you guys, because I heard you going on a rant, Seth, and I've been in the lab, and I'm going to expose Joe Kelly as even more of a fraud than you already have.
Yes.
We are going to go back to when Joe Kelly was a member of the St. Louis Cardinals. And apparently things got a little bit chippy between the Cardinals and the Dodgers. And this is prime proof that Joe Kelly is a fraud, and prime proof that this guy is nothing but a jackass clout chaser. This was Joe Kelly early on his career with the Cardinals after a game against the Dodgers.
What? This is one of those games I was coming in, being from Southern California. I never really liked the Dodgers growing up, and I kind of maybe tried too hard on some pitches and maybe got to me, but trying to score runs because it was one of the teams I looked at growing up and I wanted to beat them.
Didn't even like the Dodgers growing up. That's a quote right there. That is a quote right there.
He's our savior. We're going to have a trophy of Joe Kelly because he missed Alex Bregman completely, but then he hit Correa. We care so much about it. Landry, this is why the Dodgers can't win anything.
Soft.
Not the current Dodgers. The Dodgers of old, sure. Yeah, take all of your faded glory.
Yeah,
but the current Dodgers, you couldn't win. You love to blame the cheating. You're too soft. You can't even handle your own business. Where are you, 2017 Dodgers?
You know who is an old school Dodger? One Dusty Baker. That's who's old school Dodger. Those old school
Dusty,
sensibilities.
Dusty, I would love to see current Dusty Baker take on Joe Kelly in a fight.
Don't tempt me.
Now imagine current Dusty Baker versus an old Joe Kelly. That would just be downright homicide.
That would be a squash match. All right, Landry, so big show coming up for you.
Yeah, there's a lot to get into. I mean, we're going to get right into the beef. We're going to get right into all this drama. It's going to be fun. And there's also some news with the Texans. Mike Vrabel had some interesting things to say about the Texans, and he also had a little back and forth with the media type that got awkward.
Okay, good. And I imagine we'll hear that on the show as well. In the Loop, and of course the post-game show. Be listening following these Astro games to the post-game show. Landry's doing a killer job with that post-game show. It's your first chance right after the game anywhere to sound off on the Astros. All right, so In the Loop is up next. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig. Seth, we are back here tomorrow at 6 a.m. Antibodies, T-cells, all of the good stuff to you, my friend.
Antibodies and T-cells to you, and may all your nasal swabs be as gentle as, never mind.
A feather. A feather in the wind. Yeah, indeed.
I was about to make a sexual analogy, but it violates FCC stuff.
Now's about the time.
We're not allowed to talk about penetration, so...
Just did. All right. That's Seth Payne. I'm Sean Pendergast. Ben, Gary, Ben, antibodies, T-cells to you as well. In the Loop is up next. Seth and I will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Until then, stay safe. Have a great day, everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.